everybody. Welcome to Therapy Rocks, a personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Signa Darpinian, co-author of No Way, a teen's guide to positive body image, food, and emotional wisdom. Today's episode number 11 is a two-part segment. You can find part one in episode 7, where I talk to our guest, Dr. Brenda Schaefer, about love addiction. We'll be discussing the process of moving out of consuming romantic relationships into more mature and fulfilling love. Joining us for this conversation is Dr. Brenda Schaefer. Dr. Schaefer is the best-selling author of Is It Love or Is It Addiction? With over 600,000 publications sold in 12 languages. She is also a licensed psychologist, certified addiction specialist, and holds a doctorate in spiritual psychology. Dr. Schaefer is a national and international lecturer and workshop presenter. Brenda, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here again.
Why expel addictive love from your life?
Well, there are many reasons. It's very limiting, number one. It limits your autonomy. It limits your creativity. It limits your ability to grow. It limits your success. And maybe the one thing that is most important is that in addictive love, which is based on fear, there is a loss of self. And eventually, it's lethal. You know, little by little, people are dying in addictive love. And that can be spiritual. It can be relational. It can be self. But it can also be physical. I mean, we know about the number of suicides and the depressions that are associated with love addiction. And I think we need to take that seriously.
Do you have a favorite tool you like to use to help people move out of a relationship that no longer fits them?
First of all, I think they have to find out what healthy love is. And I talked a little bit maybe last time that real love, I mean, love itself is a measurable energy. We know that now, which is in us, above us, below us. And we have access to it anytime. But in addictive love, that other person has the control over whether or not we feel loving. Now, relationships are just the places where we go to express love or sometimes not express it. So I think people need to learn what healthy love is and what addictive love is. To know that a love relationship is like a 100-piece puzzle, and we were lucky to get 10, 20, 30 of those pieces in our history. And so I think that a lot of people mistake addictive love for love. You know, there's a lot of research now that healthy love improves the immune system, it reduces depression, it increases our life expectancy, it produces a sense of zest and induces feelings of calm, safety, and trust.
So what about starting with some traits of healthy love?
First of all, I think that it feels safe. And by that, I mean, it's safe to be who you are. It's safe to have your feelings, safe to disagree. There's a sense of trust in that relationship. And without trust, there cannot be a relationship or a healthy relationship in my book. That is essential. We need to learn to become a trustworthy friend or partner, or we need to be with someone that we trust. The basis of trust, be reliable and to be congruent. Our words and our actions match. Some of the other characteristics of healthy belonging is that it has healthy boundaries. We know where we begin and end and the other person. And that means there's a sense of autonomy. And healthy love is open to change. And it even accepts endings. And it's vital. It's alive. It encourages true intimacy. And I mean emotional intimacy, not sexual or romantic intimacy. The giving is unconditional. It accepts differences. It encourages self-esteem. It knows what love is, accepts and respects commitment. It has a bottom line, and by that I mean we no longer tolerate abusive behaviors, and we make that clear. It has healthy sexuality and romance, if that's a part of the relationship, and it cares with detachment. In other words, healthy love feels good. You know, it feels good. It feels energizing.
What if two people have decided, hopefully mutually, that the relationship is no longer salvageable?
Letting go is one of the hardest things. And I think, first of all, people need to understand that it may not be easy. Even if you've fallen out of romantic love, that person has been a part of your life. And I don't think we can let go of a person or an addiction without outside support. And we need to find that, whether it's with a therapist, whether it's with a support group, whether it's with healthy friends that you have. You need those people and to use them. I think another thing that people need to do is to remember why it's not in their best interest to stay in that relationship, or that it's in their best interest to let go, and to maybe even develop a mantra around that. You know, it's important that I let go of this relationship now because, and the reasons are unique to each person. So that has to be determined. Yeah, I think people, you know, we say, yeah, we'll end it. But if you really love that person, and I want to back up a little bit because, you know, you talk as though two people or one person decides, you know, they're wise enough to let go. Well, I find that most people are not wise enough and they hang in there too long and they hang in until they're sick, until they're depressed. And they need to listen to their friends that care about them to let go. Or you sense that that person isn't really into you, or they're mean. They're mean-spirited. They're verbally abusive. It's a lot of power struggles, a lot of drama. And that keeps people engaged, believe it or not. So, yeah, all those signs can be there, but people might not take them seriously, or they'll get back into denial and stay in those relationships. But once a person lets go and understands it is a difficult life task, I know that from working with people. And besides finding your support people, you need to live one day at a time. I think that's true in letting go of any addiction. That's true in the 12 steps. And to say, you know, I can do today what I might not be able to do for a lifetime. And to know that it takes time to heal. And so there's a lot of healthy self-talk. And, you know, using those techniques like telling yourself, this thought, feeling, behavior is not my best interest, and I will stop obsessing instantly. Deep breathing, meditation, physical exercise, and remind yourself that you made the right decision for you and that you will not give in to the compulsive self that wants to maybe step back into the relationship. And to say things like, I have everything I need to get beyond what I fear, and create new routines. You know, so much of what we've known in the immediate past is with that person. And so maybe going to a coffee shop that the two of you went to, well, don't go there for a while because it might trigger those longing feelings. And find something that you're passionate about. Maybe you forgot some of your passions when you were in a relationship. So find them. And the other thing is, especially if it's a toxic relationship, to clean out any reminders, pictures, gifts, music, anything that reminds you of that person that triggers pain and obsession.
It's so hard to know when we are leaving a relationship too quickly versus staying too long.
You know, you mentioned a very good point, Signa, and that is, how do we know we're staying for the right reasons or staying for the wrong reasons? Or how do we know that we're leaving for the right reasons or the wrong reasons? Most people don't, and I have a process that I take people through, and there are very clear stages in that process. And if you want me to, I can go over them.
I love it.
But if people make decisions too early in the process, they're really going to recreate history. So the key, the real key to getting out is to take the time to go through this process and to get to know yourself. Would you like me to go over them briefly or not?
I would love that.
Well, since I understood this process, and it was from my personal experience as well as working with other people, I began to do couples counseling much differently. And as a therapist, I would never make a promise to save a relationship. Sometimes people want me to do that. I said, I can't. I can guide you through the process, and you will come to your own answer. And the first stage is denial. Like most addictions, people rationalize, they make things okay that aren't okay. When there are problems, they might say things like, well, it's better to be in a bad relationship than none at all, or that's life, or I'm supposed to see the good in people, I don't have it so bad. Or if you're in a relationship, all couples go through this. And the hallmark of this stage is suppression. So people might feel, start moving, but then they get back into this denial. And basically, it's based on fear. Now, the second stage is discomfort. This is an important stage in that you begin to feel some discomfort with the relationship. One or both partners become aware that something's not right. There's an inner voice that says that something's not right. Mm. This is not enough, or I wonder if he loves me or I love him, or is this all there is? You know, I don't quite believe or trust him. And oftentimes, though, because people are in addictions, instead of dealing with it, they'll either go back to denial or they'll look outside the relationship to ease the discomfort. Food, affairs, work. Sometimes people just keep recycling those first two stages. Now, the third stage is confrontation. What happens is people begin to say, okay, we have a problem here. But unfortunately, what people mostly do is try to change the other person. So there's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of drama. And this is where domestic abuse will occur, because they feel that someone wants to change things and they're afraid that person is moving away. And I think that's really important. Or if the chaos gets too great, people will go back into denial or discomfort, and they keep recycling. In fact, I believe most relationships cycle those first three stages over and over. And those are unhealthy enmeshments. Those, in my book, I call love addiction. And you may no longer even be in the romantic phase. You might simply be in a relationship and you've acclimated yourself to that person. But the key, Signa, to getting out of an unhealthy relationship, those three stages I call the unhealthy we, is the psychological separation. By that I mean a person, instead of focusing on changing the other person, they need to do their own soul searching. They need to do their own work. In other words, why do I say and do the things I do? Why am I so controlling? You know, why am I so afraid? Or why do I stay in something that's unhealthy? Or who am I? So many people come to therapy and they really don't know who they are. They think they know. But you and I have talked about this, 99.9% of who we are is not conscious. So this is where a person needs to take that individual journey. When I work with couples, I tell them, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater yet, because some people will end the relationship in the confrontation or the discomfort. And when they do, it's for the wrong reasons. They don't know themselves well enough to go forward and find that healthy relationship. So that this is a difficult stage, because if you're in a relationship, you feel separate. And that's really okay, because that's something we needed to do in adolescence, and we didn't. So we might feel more anti-dependent, but it really is, I need this time for myself. And there's a story in my book about a couple going through this, and she was in therapy first, and he finally came in and finally got that he had to do his own work and not just focus on being unhappy because of her. So it's a really important I stage. It's a step to getting to where you want to go. Now, the next stage is also an I stage. In other words, it's kind of self-centered. People are taking a lot of time for themselves. And because of that, it's scary. It's scary for the person, and it's scary for their partner. I want to say, too, that not everyone is in a partnership. Even if they're not in a relationship, they need to do this work. They need to figure out, you know, why do I keep ending up here? Mm-hmm. Why do I pick people that aren't there for me? And the next stage I call resolution of self. And at this stage, people have pretty much uncovered their fears, their traumas, and they begin to integrate the old and the new. You know, we don't have to throw away everything from the past, but we learn to go through our past and say, well, I'm going to keep this, or this habit isn't causing me too much trouble. But they begin to integrate and have larger changes into their life. But one of the things I've noticed when people hit this stage is that some of the old comes back and says, you know, are you sure you want to keep going? Are you sure you want to change? Are you sure you want to grow? You know, you people might leave you if you make those changes, which is true.
Yeah.
Sometimes people do. But eventually, if a person has enough courage, you know, they just keep going. And the next stage, and these are natural stages. It's a process. And the next one is belonging. Now, on this stage, I have found that people will either leave for the right reasons or stay for the right reasons. Because they have knowledge. I've had some people actually do separation rituals. I've had other people do new commitment vows. It's been really interesting. But now, this is the place where you do couples therapy. Most of the time, people come in the first three stages, and they want you to save their relationship. But they don't have enough insight. And so I do couples therapy very differently. I separate the people, and I do a life script, and we talked about, and I do their typing, their Enneagram typing. I want them to know what they will bring into every relationship, to have some self-consciousness, I mean, healthy self-consciousness. And when they've made a decision to stay, then they will take these self-help exercises or the exercises the therapist gives them, and they will grow from them. But if you give them too early, they're going to sabotage them. Belonging, you can be both separate and close. If you're not in a relationship, you learn that belonging is in many different ways. Belonging to support groups, belonging to a family, belonging with friends. It's, you have a much more elevated understanding of healthy love. And to me, you know, it's like, why do we need a healthy sense of self? Why do we need healthy relationships, whether it's with a partner or support group? We need healthy relationships because they are the fueling dock that energize us so that we can go out into life and do what really matters. You know, share our unique gifts with life. And everybody has them. And if they've stayed with the process, they'll have discovered some they didn't even know were there. So it's more of a spiritual perspective, not necessarily religious, but it's expanding our love from an exclusive relationship to a more universal love. You know, a healthy relationship is not an ending. It's a place for just anchoring us. So, you know, it isn't a matter of just leaving a relationship and hoping for a better one next time. I think it's a journey.
When somebody has a history of addictive love and they're entering into more, you know, real love, I've noticed in my caseload that sometimes people will say, gosh, I don't know if I feel enough.
Yeah, I think in a healthy relationship, you have to create some excitement.
Sure.
But not be so attached to that perennial high. I know even for myself, I could see when I would be drawn to that excitement. But what was really interesting, as I knew myself, you know, I thought, well, I could just be more observant and say, isn't that interesting? You know, 10 years ago, you probably would have just jumped at it. And no, you know, it's not what I want now. So yeah, I think, like I said, self-awareness, self-consciousness, knowing ourselves, we know our vulnerabilities. That doesn't mean we're not going to be drawn to something, but we have tools now.
So you can recognize it. You can see that, like, oh, right. You know, there's that pattern of mine.
Right.
And maybe you can touch on an old pattern, but touching on an old pattern, of course, is different than being in your old pattern.
Right. Well, it's the same with any addict. There's no guarantee that you won't relapse. And doesn't mean you don't miss certain aspects of your addiction.
Right.
But you know the harm it caused. And you remind yourself and say, I don't want to go there again. I don't want to live there again. So I'm not going to go there. Remembering the negative consequences.
I love the idea of focusing on the rewards for change.
Right. And by the end of this process, you're living in integrity with yourself. And you don't want to give that up. You know, I work with a lot of recovering sex addicts, and I know that they're going to make it when they finally are living in integrity and they say, you know, I don't want to lose this. You know, I don't want to go back. You know, I like living the way I'm living in my own values, in my own truth.
Exactly.
And that's true of, you know, love addicts.
Brenda, you talk about the tool of honesty in relationships in place of playing psychological games, how people need to teach each other about who they are. Is this a good use of the Enneagram?
Some of your listeners may not know what the Enneagram is, but it's a very powerful and very old typing system. And what I do, there are nine types. I want people to not only know their script or their traumas or, you know, what, educate each other about that, but they need to educate people about their personality type. Because we are fixated. We look at people through our lens and we're a unique type and we think other people live that way too, or think that way, or feel that way. And they don't, and they can't. So the Enneagram is really intended to develop compassion for ourselves and other people. And I find that when people are struggling with certain things, it's usually because they're projecting something onto their partner or their type or wanting them to be like them, and they can't be. And every type has a high side and a low side. You know, they have a vice and a virtue. We all have it. And when people know this and they begin to take responsibility and work on their downside or their vice and build to be a better human, then they bring that into relationship. And they can also see, sometimes it's almost humorous, the way once they know their type, they can see how it gets them in trouble in relationships.
Brenda, thank you for helping people help themselves move out of addictive love and into healthy relationships.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how our listeners might find you.
Well, I have a Dr. Brenda Schaefer Facebook page, and I have a website, brendaschaefer.com.
Well, thank you for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us today for another episode of Therapy Rocks. And a reminder that you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And feel free to contact me at www.signadarpinian.com. See you next month.